Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading the San Angelo Standard Times local news articles. These are from the week of Sunday, March 14th, 2021. I'm reading Thursday, March 18th, 2021. And we'll begin with the most recently published articles first. COVID-19 update. Tom Green County, as of March 17th, City of San Angelo. 16,499 positive cases reported. 11 new positive tests. Deaths, 305. 198 from Tom Green County and 107 from other counties. 10 currently hospitalized. 184 active cases. Tom Green County COVID-19 vaccine tracker. 13.87 more doses administered last week by Chastity Lasky. Tom Green County has administered more than 40,336 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine as of March 16th, according to data from the Texas Department of State Health Services. That's up 13.87% from the previous week's tally of 35,424 COVID-19 doses administered. As of March 16th, 12.87% of people living in Tom Green County are fully vaccinated. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention consider someone fully vaccinated 2 weeks after they've been given a single dose shot, Johnson & Johnson, or a second dose shot, either Pfizer or Moderna. Those 50 and older can get the COVID-19 vaccination in Texas starting March 15th as part of the state's 1C group, health officials said last week. Imelda Garcia, Associate Commissioner of the State Health Agency, said the state's expert vaccine allocation panel determined that those 50 and older should be included in the next phase of vaccine eligibility because that would protect those at the greatest risk of hospitalization or death. We've seen a remarkable decrease in the number of hospitalizations and deaths since people 65 and older started becoming fully vaccinated in January, said Garcia. Expanding to ages 50 to 64 will continue the state's priorities of protecting those at the greatest risk of severe outcomes and preserving the state's health care system. As of March 16th, Texas reported 2,737,763 total cases of coronavirus, an increase of 1.22% from the week before. The five counties with the largest percentage of their population fully vaccinated in Texas as of March 16th are Throckmorton, Menard, Terrell, LaSalle, and Jeff Davis. Here are the latest numbers on COVID-19 vaccination in Tom Green County as of March 16th. 21.68% of people in Tom Green County have received only one dose of the vaccine for a total of 25,463 people. 12.87% of people in Tom Green County are fully vaccinated for a total of 15,122 people. San Angelo police searching for vehicle involved in fatal hit and run crash Thursday by Rosanna Frere and Elena Edgen, published March 18th. San Angelo police are searching for a vehicle involved in an early morning fatal crash Thursday, March 18th. According to Tracy Piet Fox, SAPD Public Information Officer, a traffic officer was conducting a traffic enforcement in the 1300 block of South Bryant Boulevard when he observed a gray SUV speeding southbound. When the officer attempted to safely catch up to the vehicle, he observed the SUV to run a red light and collide with another vehicle, she said in a media briefing. The driver of the second vehicle fled the scene. Police are searching for a light-colored 2001 to 2005 Ford Explorer Sport or Sport Track with front-end damage that T-boned the speeding vehicle. The vehicle that was originally speeding southbound was occupied by five people. One of the passengers was located deceased at the scene. A second passenger who was transported to a nearby medical facility was pronounced deceased, Piet Fox said. Three other occupants are being treated for their injuries. The extent of their injuries are unknown at this time, according to Piet Fox. Bryant and Avenue N North and southbound lanes were still closed as of 10 a.m. Thursday and are expected to remain closed for another hour. If you have any information about the suspect and vehicle location, contact the San Angelo Police Department at 325-657-4315. To remain anonymous, text TIP, T-I-P-S-A-P-D, to 888-777 and follow the prompts. Police say San Angelo man gave two teens drinks, sexually assaulted them. By Elena Edgen, published March 18th. A San Angelo man has been arrested after two 15-year-olds were sexually assaulted, according to an arrest affidavit released Thursday. On February 28, 2021, police received reports that the teenagers received alcoholic drinks from a man. The man then took them to his home and sexually assaulted them, records state. A witness provided GPS tracking evidence, which placed one of the teens at the house on the day. The man told police he did take the teens to his house and sexually assaulted them, according to the affidavit. Chad Emil Hollick, 20, was arrested Thursday on suspicion of two counts of sexual assault of a child. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of an $80,000 bond as of noon Thursday, according to online jail records. Big Spring police charged two men with murder in connection with shooting last week, by Nathaniel Ellsworth, Abilene Reporter News. Two men were charged with murder this week in connection with a shooting death here earlier this month, the Big Spring Police Department said in news releases Wednesday and Thursday. Anselmo Vicente Rangel, 24, was arrested by officers at about 4:40 p.m. Tuesday and charged with murder in connection with the killing of Casey Brackett, 29, on Wednesday, the release said. At approximately 9:30 a.m. Thursday, Hayden Douglas McMurrin, 31, also was served with an arrest warrant and charged with murder in connection with Brackett's death, according to the Thursday release. At the time of the charge, McMurrin was already in Howard County Jail, the release said. He was arrested on March 12th and charged with tampering, fabricating physical evidence in connection with the murder investigation. On March 8th, Brackett was found with a life-threatening gunshot wound in the driver's seat of a white 2007 Ford Focus stopped on the side of the road near East 18th and Austin Streets, an earlier release said. Brackett died from his injuries after being transported to Scenic Mountain Medical Center. The investigation is ongoing, police said, and no further information is currently available. Police say vehicle with keys in ignition, stolen, crashed by San Angelo man. By Elena Edgen, published March 18th. A San Angelo man has been arrested after a person was injured trying to stop a vehicle theft, according to an arrest affidavit released Thursday. On Wednesday, March 17th, police responded to an unauthorized use of a motor vehicle at a restaurant in the 1300 block of North Chadburn Street. A man told police he had been in the restaurant and a short time later saw the suspect enter his vehicle, records state. The man had left the keys in the ignition and the vehicle running. He attempted to stop the suspect and grab the car, but was thrown off as the car drove away. He struck his head and had injuries to his right shoulder, elbow, ankle, and left elbow, according to the affidavit. Video surveillance showed the suspect enter the car and the man fall. The suspect and vehicle were found driving east on East 28th Street from Armstrong Street. A chase ensued and the suspect crashed the car, records state. On Wednesday, police mentioned the case on Facebook and issued a warning to people not to leave their vehicles unattended. The San Angelo Police Department wants to remind our citizens that vehicles left running outside homes, in front of convenience stores, restaurants, and at gas pumps present an easy target for car thieves, the Post stated. It only takes seconds for a thief to steal a vehicle left running while unattended or unoccupied. Always take your keys with you and secure your vehicle, even for a short trip into the store. Sean Hunter Wisdom, 18, was arrested Wednesday on suspicion of aggravated robbery, evading arrest detention with a vehicle, and possession of delivery of drug paraphernalia. He remained in the Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of an $85,662 bond as of 11:45 a.m. Thursday, according to online jail records. Fixing San Angelo's potholes could be a hefty price tag with 17,000 square yards of pavement, by John Tufts, published March 17th. Weeks after Winter Storm Uri left San Angelo under a thick blanket of ice and snow, city officials believe they have an estimate on what it will take to fix the many potholes caused by the blizzard. The damage to San Angelo's streets is extensive, according to officials, who say local roadways are riddled with holes and pockmarked across town. We're looking at approximately 16,000 to 17,000 square yards of area that need to be rehabilitated after the storm, said Shane Kelton, who was recently promoted to Executive Director of Public Works. It could be anywhere from just a patch over the top to digging out and then re-asphalting the street. Potholes are formed after water seeps into the road, then freezes, expands, and melts, loosening the pavement. When vehicles drive over these spots, the impact further loosens the road, creating a hole. On Tuesday, March 16th, Kelton said crews from the city are already hard at work, chipping away at repairing more than 2.5 football fields worth of potholes in San Angelo. Fixing the damage quickly should be a priority, Kelton said during an interview with the Standard Times. As San Angelo moves into its annual storm season, gushing rainwater and traffic could make February's potholes worse. We're trying to get it done as soon as possible. The sooner the better, Kelton said. The longer we wait to repair it, the more damage is going to be done to the surrounding pavement edges and road base. The economic impact of Winter Storm Uri across Texas is in the hundreds of billions of dollars, according to preliminary estimates by financial analysts like the Perryman Group. The Texas-based economic research agency recently released a report projecting last month's unprecedented winter freeze could have an impact of about $295 billion. Kelton estimates the overall cost to repair San Angelo's potholes could be as high as $600,000 for both materials and labor. Depending on the size of the pothole, the kind of repairs needed, and the response received by the city in requests for other companies to assist with patchwork, Kelton said he's estimating between $500,000 to $600,000 price range to recover from all of the issues caused by the winter storm. Kelton said he would address repairing San Angelo's streets with public officials at a later city council meeting. Indictment states San Angelo man sent intimate images of woman to her daughter, by Elena Edgen, published March 17th. A San Angelo man has been indicted months after he reportedly sent sexual images of a woman to her daughter, according to an indictment released Wednesday. Around November 30th, 2020, a man sent an intimate photo and a video of a woman to her daughter, according to the indictment. The indictment did not give the daughter's age. The man sent the images with the intent to harm the woman, records state. He identified the woman in the electronic messages to the daughter. Jose Luis Orozco, 52, was arrested Wednesday under the indicted two charges of publishing intimate visual material. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $15,000 bond as of 1:15 p.m. Wednesday, according to online jail records. The charges are state jail felonies, punishable by up to 2 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000 each. A court date has not yet been scheduled as of 1:15 p.m. Wednesday, according to online court records. Indictment states San Angelo man promises to assault state trooper, give him COVID-19, by Elena Edgen, published March 16th. A San Angelo man has been indicted months after a traffic stop led to a state trooper being threatened, according to an indictment released Tuesday. About 10:30 p.m., November 22nd, 2020, a Texas Department of Public Safety trooper stopped a vehicle in the area of Foster Road and the Loop 306 Service Road, record state. The vehicle was speeding erratically, drifting in its lane and driving on the lines. The driver appeared to have glassy eyes and was unfocused. The driver became argumentative and the trooper forcibly detained him, placing him in the patrol vehicle, record state. The driver then told the trooper, "I'm going to expletive you up." The trooper asked if that was a threat, to which he replied, "No, that's a promise," according to the arrest affidavit. The threats continued, and the driver also said he would give the trooper COVID-19. The trooper located a bag of green powder, which the driver told him was Xanax, according to the trooper's report. Franklin Gayton, 18, was arrested November 23rd on suspicion of possession of a controlled substance, retaliation, driving while intoxicated, walking with traffic, and a warrant. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $12,866 bond as of 3:45 p.m. Tuesday, according to online jail records. The indictment charged Gayton with retaliation, a third-degree felony, punishable by up to 10 years in jail, and a fine not to exceed $10,000. A court date has not been scheduled as of 3:45 p.m. Tuesday, according to online court records. Indictment states San Angelo woman charged in donut shop DWI threatened to decapitate police, by Elena Edgen, published March 16th. A San Angelo woman has been indicted after a donut shop was badly damaged and law enforcement was threatened with death, according to court documents released Tuesday. About 2:53 a.m., January 17th, police responded to a vehicle-building collision in the 2200 block of Sherwood Way, according to a news release. They discovered a 2006 gray Ford SUV had been traveling westbound when it left the roadway and crashed into Express Donuts in Kalachis. During the incident, the suspect became angry and threatened medical staff and a police officer with physical harm in retaliation for their duties, the release stated. The suspect threatened to cut an officer's head off, according to an arrest affidavit. Grace Olivia Sanchez, 21, was arrested January 17th on suspicion of driving while intoxicated, failure to control speed, and retaliation. She was released from Tom Green County Detention Center the next day on an $11,470 bond, according to online court records. The indictment charged Sanchez with the retaliation, a third-degree felony, punishable by up to 10 years in jail, and a fine not to exceed $10,000. A court date has not been set as of 2:30 p.m. Tuesday, according to online jail records. The Express Donuts and Kolaches building remains closed and damaged as of Tuesday. Chadburn Street Project moves to next phase. Traffic will remain open for now. By Elena Edgen, published March 16th. The project to improve downtown San Angelo's Chadburn Street has moved to the next phase after a winter storm caused delays. The second phase, which will revamp Chadburn Street between Tuig and Beauregard Avenues, began demolition Monday, according to a city news release. The Tuig and Chadburn intersection will stay open at this time. Businesses that will be affected will be notified. The Concho Avenue and Chadburn Street intersection, which was closed during the first phase, has reopened to the traveling public on a limited basis. If you are traveling through this area, please proceed with caution and make sure to follow all traffic signs, as construction crews will still be working in the area, the release stated. What will the Chadburn Street project do? The project will replace aging infrastructure and improve pedestrian access in downtown San Angelo. The improvements include concrete street reconstruction, ADA accessible sidewalks, traffic signal replacement, pavement markings and signage, street lighting, landscaping, storm drains, utility adjustments, a large ADA ramp structure to connect the Chadburn Street corridor to the Concho River Trail system. Funding from the project comes from the city and a Transportation Alternatives set-aside grant administered by the Texas Department of Transportation. The estimated completion date is summer 2022. A milk jug's worth of chemicals, or less, may have caused San Angelo's water contamination. City says 29 residents are still without water. By John Tufts, published March 16th. Less than a gallon's worth of chemicals spilling down the drain last month may have caused San Angelo's worst infrastructure crisis in recent memory, according to a statement made Tuesday by city officials. On Tuesday, March 16th, Water Utilities Director Allison Strube briefed city council members after a closed executive session concerning San Angelo's ongoing water woes. In February, officials discovered high levels of contaminants, which included benzene, acetone, and naphthalene, dripping from faucets in San Angelo's Paul Ann neighborhood. The contamination led to a citywide Do Not Use Water advisory. While restrictions have eased for most of San Angelo, it's still too dangerous in some parts of the city to drink, cook, or consume the water. Strube told officials there were as many as 29 residents in the Northern Industrial Zone who still cannot use their water and who are under a Do Not Drink advisory. Last week, a spokesperson for the city said the water advisory will last for the foreseeable future until investigators can discover what caused the source of the contamination. Strube said that could take a while. "We are truly looking for a needle in the haystack scenario," Strube said. "It could have been chemical volumes less than a gallon that caused issues that we saw around February 8th. Portions of San Angelo's northern industrial zone as of Tuesday remain under a water advisory, despite lab tests which revealed no detectable levels of 10 possible contaminants that have been found in water samples collected in the area. The water in San Angelo's northern industrial zone has been isolated from the rest of the city for the time being." San Angelo Public Information Officer Brian Groves said officials were being cautious and wanted to ensure any deficiencies found during the investigation process are fixed and addressed before the city returns to normal operations. "Currently, the area remains valved off from the rest of the water system," Groves said last week. "It will be some time before those valves are opened and the northern industrial area is released from the current Do Not Drink advisory." On Tuesday, Strube said she believed the issue would be a one-time occurrence and that the city was working with businesses in the northern industrial area to improve their plumbing by adding backflow prevention devices to prevent future spills from occurring. Strube said business owners themselves, and not the taxpayers, were paying for their own plumbing upgrades. "This is all on the customer side, and so it is at the customer's expense to install those devices," Strube said. What's the city doing to help residents who still have no water? Council members were told Tuesday the 29 San Angelo residents who still cannot cook, consume, or drink city water are receiving assistance. "We are delivering them bottled water every other day," Strube said during an interview with the Standard Times. "I've been told they are getting 6 cases of water for each delivery." While crews continue to deliver water to residents still under the advisory, Strube said investigators are still searching for what caused the contamination, which she stated would take time. "It could have been less than a gallon that caused the issues we saw February 8th, Strube said. "So we're not looking for tens of thousands of gallons of a chemical. We're looking for a milk jug or less." Off-duty San Angelo police officer arrested and charged with driving while intoxicated. By Rosanna Frere and John Tufts, San Angelo Standard Times, published March 15th. An off-duty San Angelo police officer was arrested Saturday on charges he drove while under the influence of alcohol, according to a news release. On Saturday, March 13th, troopers with the Texas Department of Public Safety, DPS, arrested 54-year-old Abel Nandon of San Angelo after they suspected him of driving while intoxicated. He was off duty when the incident occurred, a release stated. Officials released Nandon later Saturday on a $1,000 bond. Nandon, who has served with the San Angelo Police Department for 22 years, will be subject to both criminal and administrative investigations, the release stated. DPS announced crackdown on reckless Texas drivers in Texas during spring break. 2 days before Nandon's arrest occurred, officials with DPS announced troopers planned to step up enforcement efforts during spring break. DPS, Texas Highway Patrol troopers, will increase traffic enforcement as part of Operation CARE, Crash Awareness and Reduction Effort, from March 13th through March 21st, including St. Patrick's Day, a news release stated. DPS Director Stephen McCraw encouraged drivers in Texas to be responsible while on the state's highways. Spring break can be a time of fun, but we want the people of Texas and visitors to our state to enjoy themselves responsibly, McCraw stated. The public can help our troopers by driving safely and obeying traffic laws. DPS will join other law enforcement agencies in patrolling our highways to help keep them safe from reckless drivers or anyone who is not following the law. During the next week, troopers will look for intoxicated drivers, speeders, people not wearing their seat belts, and other violations, the release stated. DPS issued more than 59,000 tickets during Spring Break 2020. During the 2020 Spring Break enforcement effort, DPS troopers issued more than 59,000 citations and warnings, including 5,580 speeding citations and 824 seatbelt and child seat violations, a news release stated. Troopers also made 398 driving while intoxicated arrests, 315 fugitive arrests, and 175 felony arrests. Police say San Angelo man signed ex-girlfriend up for dating and hookup site and porn magazine. By Elena Edgen, published March 15th. A San Angelo man has been arrested after a woman discovered unsolicited emails from men and an unwanted subscription to a pornographic magazine, according to an arrest affidavit released Monday. Around December 24th, 2020, a woman ended a dating relationship with a man. By February 2021, she began to receive emails from a dating and hookup site, according to an affidavit. She also received an email confirming a one-year subscription to a pornographic magazine, which was paid with a credit card, records state. She confronted the man through text, and he responded that she could unsubscribe and that he was sorry, according to the affidavit. Police attempted to speak with the man, who directed them to his attorney. The attorney stated the man wished to remain silent, records state. Scotty Edwin Moore, 59, was arrested Friday on suspicion of online impersonation using the name or persona to create a page. Moore was released from Tom Green County Detention Center the next day on a $15,000 bond, according to online jail records. This charge is a third-degree felony, punishable by up to 10 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. San Angelo coffee shop closes. Books, furniture, and equipment for sale this week. By Rosanna Frere, published March 15th. After nearly 5 years of business, a San Angelo coffee shop has closed its doors and will have a liquidation sale. Coffee 101 opened on July 25th, 2016, and had its final business day on March 12th, 2021. Coffee 101 family, it is with great sadness that we have to announce our final closure, according to a Facebook post on March 9th. We hate to say goodbye to our Coffee 101 family. You are the greatest customers in all the world. The shop at 101 North Main Street will have its going out of business sale from March 18th through the 20th. On Thursday and Friday, the shop will be open from 3 to 6 p.m. and Saturday from 8 a.m. to noon. All stock, furniture, and equipment will be for sale. All sales are final and cash only. We will simultaneously have a book sale, the post stated. All bookstore furniture is for sale as well, including commercial shelving units, receiving tables, drop box, and front desk. San Angelo residents aged 40 and over can now register to get the COVID vaccine. Here's how. By John Tufts, published March 15th. More people in San Angelo can get vaccinated against COVID-19 after Shannon Medical Center announced Monday it was expanding its eligibility criteria to include all residents age 40 or older. On Monday, March 15th, a hospital spokesperson announced Shannon would begin administering vaccines to San Angelo residents over the age of 40 who make appointments online or over the phone, a news release stated. Those who wish to schedule their first dose of the vaccine can register and select their appointment time online at www.shannonhealth.com/COVID vaccine. They may also call their physician's office or the Shannon COVID hotline at 844-674-2666, the release stated. Here's who can get vaccinated for COVID-19 in San Angelo. The current eligibility for San Angelo residents to receive the vaccine includes anyone aged 40 or over, anyone working at a school or childcare operation, healthcare workers and first responders, other individuals under the age of 40 with at least one of the following health conditions: cancer, chronic kidney disease, COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, Down syndrome, heart conditions such as heart failure, coronary artery disease, or cardiomyopathies, solid organ transplantation, obesity and severe obesity, sickle cell disease, type 2 diabetes, organ transplant, pregnant. The Shannon Vaccine Clinic is located at Sunset Mall, 4001 Sunset Drive, in the former Bell's Department Store location. Date Night 2021 to be held at San Angelo River Stage. Tickets now on sale. By Rosanna Frere, published March 15th. San Angelo's annual Date Night is back on track for 2021 after being canceled last year due to COVID-19. This year's event will be held outdoors at the Bill Ayler Senior Memorial River Stage, 16 East Avenue A, by the City of San Angelo's Recreation Division. Boots and Bling on the River is only a two-night event this year. Daddy-daughter date night will be Monday, April 12th from 6 to 9 p.m. Mother-son date night will be Tuesday, April 13th from 6 to 9 p.m. Date night gives girls and boys ages 5 to 13 a special night during which they are the sole focus of their parents' attention, according to a news release. The event includes music from a DJ, dancing, snacks, and door prizes. Date night tickets are on sale now. Ticket costs this year will be $6 each and can be purchased at 702 South Chadburn Street. For more information, call the recreation offices at 325-657-4450. Here's another article that we had to delete earlier this month because we had no time for it. I'll read it now. Dinosaurs are at Angelo State University. Here's what we know and a sneak peek. By Elena Edgen, published March 4th. This story has been updated to include more information about the dinosaurs. Angelo State University has transferred 8 of what will likely be their oldest residents in history, literal dinosaurs, into their newest building. As the upcoming ASU Mayer Museum nears the end of construction, people have noticed 2 creatures inside the museum. A large Tyrannosaurus rex towered near the entrance windows, a Pterodactyl, which is classified as a pterosaur and not a dino, and it soars by the T-Rex near the ceiling. It was amazing to walk in there and see the jaws, said Becky Bracken, director of the Office of Communications and Marketing for ASU. We are going to have a grand opening probably sometime in May, and I can't wait for everybody to see it. It's awe-inspiring. There are more dinosaur replicas throughout the building, which were cast by Tribold Paleontology in Woodland Park, Colorado, according to Rick Rashada Sr., Program Director for Facilities Planning and Construction for the Texas Tech University System. The replicas and their sizes are a 13-feet tall T-Rex skeleton, 37 feet long, a 5-feet, 9 inches long Agujarceratops skeleton, a 3-feet, 4 inches long Didelphodonon skeleton, a 3-feet long Bambiropter skeleton, Quetzalcoatlus small skeleton with a wingspan of 12 feet long, New Hell Creek predator skeleton with a wingspan of 4 feet long. A 10 feet long Styxosaurus juvenile skeleton. Megalodon jaws measuring 9 feet, 4 inches wide. The museum will also house art classes, a student gallery, the historic West Texas collection, and a room with fossils and gemstones, Bracken mentioned. I can't wait for everybody to see it, Bracken said. What is the Mayer Museum? The ASU Mayer Museum, 1825 South Johnson Street, is in the construction process, which began in August 2019. The plans for the 32,005-square-foot structure included a new home for the West Texas Collection and a new home for the university's art program, according to a 2018 release. The interior will also include labs for graphic design, sculpture and ceramics, faculty and staff offices, and support spaces. The exterior would also get some upgrades with landscape enhancements, parking, and public art installations. Funding for the upcoming museum came from private resources, according to the release. Richard and B.J. Mayer gave a generous gift to the project. The museum's budget is $17,850,000, according to Texas Tech University. The Mayer family has been heavily involved with ASU, and B.J. Mayer has dreamed of having a museum on the campus, according to Bracken. The museum was gifted as a surprise to B.J. from Richard during a press conference on March 2, 2018. B.J.'s friend, Linda Nightstep, had been clued in to get her to the event just a little late, according to an ASU news release. As the event began, B.J. was visibly moved to learn her husband Richard had secretly funded her longtime dream, the new ASU Museum. She talked often about a day when the West Texas Collection could have its own space and the art program could have display space. San Angelo Museum of Fine Arts tells the story of a West Texas adventure by Linda Thorson Bond, published March 17th. 100 years ago, coming to West Texas was the ultimate adventure. Artists from the big cities like Dallas and Fort Worth piled into a Model T Ford touring bus that rattled like a cicada, for which it was nicknamed. Their luggage was sparse, stuffed with pastels and easels instead of fancy clothes. Roughing it was not an abstract concept on these sketching trips. The artist who followed Frank Ray to the Concho River dreamed of capturing the Wild West before it disappeared. They had their heart set on seizing the kaleidoscope shades of the sunset, the vanishing herds of longhorns. They threw their lot in with the Dean of Texas painters, and sometimes they made masterpieces. For 20 years, the Cicada took students on annual sketching trips that ranged from the Texas Panhandle, south to the Big Bend, and west to New Mexico and Arizona. An artifact of Ray's legacy was that some of his students founded the Texas Artists Camp in 1921 in the San Angelo area, where students stayed at a simple Baptist encampment near Cristoval. The San Angelo Museum of Fine Arts exhibit, In the Steps of the Master, tells the story of Ray and the adventurous artists who traveled with him. This is the first museum show from the collection of Michael Phillips. Now an attorney in Houston, Phillips is originally from the San Angelo area. SAMHSA's exhibit features works that were completed by Ray and his students, many of whom became prominent Texas artists in their own right. There are 31 works displayed, including many that were created in plein air, in the open air, and a video of Ray's multimedia performance, 24 hours from with the herd, using 7 of his paintings with music and narration. The SAMHSA exhibit is on display until April 11th, but the genetic legacy of Ray and his students is connected in an exhibit called Light, Color, Beauty that will be on display until June 27th. 6 paintings the museum purchased for their permanent collection came from the artists who traveled to San Angelo to paint in plein air, just like Ray's students did 100 years before them. In Plein Air, Texas is the direct descendants of Ray and his students' adventures. SAMHSA's annual event brings artists to San Angelo who are drawn to the austere beauty and uncommon landscapes of West Texas. They may not travel by cicada, but they share artistic dreams that began over 100 years ago. The Master. Ray was born in Illinois in 1860. He and his family settled on a farm near Terrell in 1876, then moved to Oak Cliff near Dallas in 1890. He began sketching cattle drives and roundups, concentrating on small, plein air pastel sketches of the Texas Longhorn. In the course of his life, from 1860 to 1945, Ray created 7,000 works, concentrating on small, pastel sketches of the Texas Longhorn. He said, "No animal on earth has the beauty of the Texas steer." His mother encouraged him to paint true-to-life forms. He said, "I would sit in the midst of the herds to study their form, the workings of their muscles, their character and habits, their characteristic spots and markings, and their wonderfully rich and varied colors." He helped found the Dallas Art Society, which developed into the Dallas Museum of Art, the Frank Ray Art Club, and the Strignian Club. Some of his paintings are displayed at the Texas State Capitol, the Panhandle Plains Historical Museum, the Southwest Collection Special Library Collection at Texas Tech University, and the Harry Ransom Humanities Research Center. Because of his travels to sketch, he invented tools for artists, including a folding lap easel and a compact carrying case for pastels. His own brand of pastels was blended to match the native flora of the West and cast in a hexagonal shape for ease of handling and packing in the field. Ray said, "Pastels are particularly suited to outdoor sketching. One advantage is readiness. The palette is set. The colors are mixed. All this makes for speed, the essential in landscape sketching where effects are fleeting. Nature's beauty of design is matchless. Man's invention compares with it much as his feats of engineering compare with the motion of the stars." The students. As early as 1890, Ray began taking students west on sketching trips on horseback, mule, and wagon. He started an art school in Dallas in 1897. He got the Ford Model T touring bus he named the Cicada in 1920. There was no shortage of men and women who piled into it, despite the hard wooden seats and even harder accommodations on the road. Howard Taylor, executive director of SAMHSA, said, "Imagine those men and women traveling in an uncomfortable touring bus on dusty roads. They really roughed it, and they came to our rich and beautiful West Texas landscape, and it inspired them to create art. I would have liked to have been there. Those trips with Ray were the spark that helped inspire much of the art of Texas today." In 1921, one of Ray's students, Molly Crowther, co-founded the Texas Artists Camp at Christoval. Crowther moved to San Angelo from Fort Worth and promoted professional fellowships and instruction for the visiting artists. In the 7 years of its existence, the camp became a leading institution in the Southwest. Crowther, who was known for her bluebonnet paintings, literally gave her life for the camp, dying of heat stroke while camp was in session in 1927. Helen King Kendall started studying with Ray when she was 16, helped Crowther run and promote the Texas Artists Camp, and was an instructor. When the camp closed, she taught lessons in her San Angelo studio. She was also the second president of the San Angelo Art Club. Her work was exhibited at the Frank Ray Art Club in Dallas and at the Pabst Galleries in San Antonio. The San Angelo Art Club's Kendall Gallery is named for her. Well-known artists who studied with Ray include Revaux Bassett, Florence McClung, John Douglas, Alexandra Hoag, Edward G. Eisenlohr, Olin Travis, and Josephine Oliver. Several became part of the Dallas Nine. The Descendants. If a genealogical study could have been done of Ray's influence, one of the descendants would surely be in plein air Texas. The kind of adventure that Ray and his students enjoy has thrived in San Angelo for the past 8 years. The current annual event started with San Angelo artist Barbara Rallo. Like Kendall, Rallo was a president of San Angelo Art Club. She had been having her own arts adventure once a year since 1998 when she and Trevor Boyd began traveling to the south of France to paint with Charleston artist Margaret Heubach. I had no idea that what we were doing was painting in plein air in France, Rollo said. Then my husband Joe and I went to Eastern Maryland to the largest plein air event in the country, and I fell in love with it. I was planning a 3-day workshop for artists here when I realized San Angelo would be a perfect big plein air event. The people, the environment, and the enthusiasm seemed right. I heard about the rickety old Model T with people sitting on wooden seats, traveling all the distance. Then I learned about the Texas Artist Camp in the 1920s, and all of it fell into place. The camp was quite primitive. They came to sketch and paint West Texas. I felt these early artists were the inspiration of what should be here in San Angelo today. In 2013, Rollo approached Taylor at SAMHSA because I just knew we had to do it, and pitched the idea of plein air event in San Angelo. It didn't take long for Taylor to connect the itinerant artists of the Texas art tradition in Ray's Cicada to the need for in plein air Texas in San Angelo. The idea that it was connected to Ray's sketching trips to West Texas made a complete circle for him. The museum is the headquarters for the Center for the Advancement and Study of Early Texas Art, Taylor explained. When we discovered the history of the unique arts colony here, we realized this is part of a bigger picture in the Texas art tradition. Rollo said, from an artist's standpoint, plein air makes you a better artist because your brain and eye are seeing directly rather than looking at a photograph. In plein air is the spirit of painting outdoors with like-minded artists rather than alone in a studio. In the public side of it, you are documenting a moment in time. Maybe you're preserving a historic building or a barn that is almost falling down. It's capturing the way something looks in that moment that has struck your heart. She feels in plein air Texas is in the spirit of Ray and his students. The artists today come in the spirit of those artists, Rollo said. They are traveling to the Wild West Texas, to the authentic West. They get to paint on private property, on ranches, on the river. What we may take for granted, they find unexpected and even exotic. If people don't think West Texas is full of beauty, they should see the paintings that are done at In Plein Air Texas. The artists see colors we pass by because we look at them all the time. They see the light bouncing off the land. They see how the land looks in the sunset, and they remind us that there is nothing ordinary about our West Texas landscape. The two exhibits at SAMHSA, In the Steps of the Master and the Plein Air Works in Light, Color, Beauty, trace the family tree of the art of today and the art of yesterday. It all began over 100 years ago with a Model T touring bus bumping its way to an adventure in West Texas. It continues with the artists who seek that same adventure today. The results are rich, beautiful art that captures the spirit of painting in the open air. And now here's the column from Michael Price. Black-tailed rattlesnakes are a less-known species among most Texans. Published March 17th. When a person mentions the word rattlesnake, the image immediately conjured up is that of the defensively coiled and agitated diamondback rattler. However, in Texas, there are 8 species of rattlesnakes, and one of my favorites is the variety that rarely makes its presence known by utilizing the telltale rattle. The black-tailed rattlesnake, Crotalus aurantius, occurs from central New Mexico eastward through the Chihuahuan Desert, portions of western Texas to near Austin, then south to the Mexican states of Coahuila and Nuevo León. In Texas, it is most frequently observed in the mountainous areas of the Trans-Pecos, less often in the hill country. Unlike its close relative, the western diamondback rattlesnake, black-tailed rattlesnakes are habitat specialists, living primarily in the canyons and stream beds of those areas. This is a moderately large species of rattlesnake that can attain lengths of up to 4 feet, with the record size being 52 inches, although most adults average just over 3 feet in length. Black-tailed rattlesnakes have unique and distinctive coloration and pattern characteristics. The most obvious is the dark tail that ranges in color from jet black to a charcoal black. Another is the black nose and forehead that gives this snake the appearance of having dipped the front part of its face into black ink. The background is primarily black along the spine, with a pattern of variably colored patches of pale scales along the first half of the body. At least in the confines of this state, these pale patches range in color from light tan to yellow to greenish. Specimens from the limestone-filled Edwards and Stockton plateaus typically are lighter in coloration than the ones that inhabit the igneous rock mountains of the Trans-Pecos. No other rattlesnake that lives in this animal's range exhibits these characteristics. Like other rattlesnakes, the head of this species is distinctively wider than the neck, giving this animal the famous diamond-shaped head. The pupils are elliptical, and the rattle is large and is capable of being heard from several yards away. Unlike other large species of rattlesnakes, the black-tailed rattlesnake does not winter together in large numbers. The process of brumation, not hibernation, as the animal does not sleep through the winter, but rather just slows its heart rate and metabolism, generally takes place between late October to mid-March. Even in midwinter, this species may make an appearance on exceptionally warm days to bask in the heating rays from the sun, particularly females that are carrying fertilized ova. Breeding takes place in the fall, with the female holding on to its mate's sperm over the winter until spring, when ovulation actually takes place. Several studies have shown that this species of snake will mate for life, reproducing with the same mate year after year while cohabitating in the same area. Blacktails are oviviparous, which means they give birth to living young, and the 9-inch long neonates, which number from 6 to 10. Are typically born in late summer and early fall. Other than having a button on the end of the tail, they are exact replicas of the adults and are fully capable of fending for themselves, including having fully functional fangs and venom apparatus. This species is typically crepuscular, active at dawn and dusk, during the spring and fall when nighttime temperatures begin to fall, and are nocturnal, active at night, during the summer months, when the daytime temperatures exceed intolerable highs. It uses its venom to obtain its prey, which is primarily made up of rodents of various sizes. Juveniles will occasionally add lizards to their diet. Black-tailed rattlesnakes as a whole are not as high-strung and temperamental as the more common western diamondback rattler, and their venom is only about 80% as potent. This does not make them any less dangerous, but because they live in areas that are generally inaccessible to the general public, they are not considered by most to be a serious threat to people. In fact, many ranchers will often leave the colas negras alone while exterminating any and all diamondbacks on site. When participating in outdoor activities, the risk of encountering a black-tailed rattler is remarkably slim, although it can and does happen occasionally. If such an encounter occurs, remember that this animal, despite its harmful capability, is more afraid of you than you are of it, and would prefer to be left alone. Michael Price is owner of Wild About Texas, an educational company that specializes in venomous animal safety training, environmental consultations, and ecotourism. Contact him at wildabouttexas@gmail.com. And finally, here's our column from Allison Watkins. Tomatoes and spring flowers can now be cautiously planted. Published March 17th. Is it time to plant tomatoes and spring flowers? Gardeners and homeowners are itching to get some life going in their yards with so much brown left from the winter storm. Warm season vegetables and annual flowers can't handle a freeze, so it's always a big question every year when to plant. The average last frost in the Concho Valley is around late March, early April. So if you choose to plant early, be sure you have a plan ready to go in case there is a late frost. Frost cloth, row cover, is very helpful in protecting plants from short light frosts. It's a much better option than covering with plastic because, one, leaves will freeze anywhere plastic touches the plant. And two, as soon as the sun comes out in the morning, it will quickly get too hot inside a plastic cover. Tomatoes in particular do best when planted as early in the spring as possible, while still avoiding freezing temperatures. Tomato plants like cool weather. Not too hot, not too cold. They don't set fruit well in high temperatures, and it heats up quickly in West Texas spring and summer. Purchase large, healthy transplants and fertilize and water properly to get as much vigorous, healthy growth as possible to harvest plenty of tomatoes before it gets too hot. To keep production going longer, choose heat-tolerant varieties such as Phoenix, Tycoon, Homestead, and any small cherry variety like Husky Cherry Red. Other vegetables like melons, squash, peppers, and okra do just fine in the heat as long as they have adequate water. To have the best success with vegetables, loosen and improve the soil with compost before planting to provide oxygen and nutrients to plant roots. Install drip irrigation, and then apply a thick layer of mulch after planting transplants or after seeds emerge and grow tall enough. Mulch does a lot to help plants. It reduces weeds, prevents evaporation, and moderates soil temperature, etc. Some annual color will really brighten up the yard and help with curb appeal while we wait to finish cleaning up freeze-damaged shrubs and perennials. Plant flowers like petunias, begonias, periwinkles, pentas, geraniums, and alyssum in pots and in groups in flower beds. Planting annuals in pockets or in small, closely planted groups helps them to have more color pop and impact. Save the date for the Master Gardener plant sale. On Saturday, April 10th at 8 a.m., the doors will open up for customers at the Tom Green 4-H Center. Masks and social distancing are required. For details and a list of plants that will be available, visit https://txmg.org/Concho Valley. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.